Yo, this your boy Doc Holliday. You now tuned in to the Def Fresh Show with Young Fresh.
I done came up, got my name up. So when they speak of who blinged up, I'm who they bring up. Come up dissing and you'll come up missing. I'm a cutthroat baller like O.J. Simpson. Little homie, listen, try and serve me. I put a 25 in your back like Barry Bonds. On the street, on the beat, y'all ain't able to. I shit on rappers like major labels. What's with the ice grilling, homie? Change your face. Just either do more to change you to change your race. Girls love metaphor, and I love them back. Addicted to getting head. Chicks call me the brainiac. Battle rap with words war like jihad. I write dope, flow crack, my notepad need rehab. Fuck y'all CDs, y'all can't see these or touch these. Rhyme so chronic, my songs feed you the munchies.
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah. Oh, sometimes when you hear things, you just want to pop lock like it's 85. You know, but got some cardboard spin on your head type shit. You know, I always wanted to learn how to break dance.
No, dog.
I never thought break dancing wasn't like a fat man thing. But like break dancing,
it is definitely not a fat man thing.
But it looks dope though.
Now, it do, but it's not built for you.
You can't tell me that you never wanted to do the little spin around your shit, Booker T.
I ain't missed that all my life though. So I was at one point in time the little skinny nigga that could pull off the spooner, the spinner roomie though. I probably could still pull it off right now if I try. Give me a cardboard and a pair of Vans.
I pay good money for you to do a spin around.
You pay how much?
Good money.
No. I need numbers here, bro.
You need numbers?
I need numbers. Cause I'll go live right now.
No, bro. I don't want to see you fail like that, fam.
Nah, bro. Of course I'll practice a couple of times before I turn the live on.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Stupid. I do it.
Some people are. Facebook Live is for those of the stupid variety.
I mean, but for some, yeah, but Facebook done evolved itself pretty well, though. From back in the days where it was nothing but, like, you had to be a college student to use it, to now you can watch full-blown wrestling matches from top companies on Facebook. So, I mean, we done came a long way. No big deal. I'd rather be with you
too.
Yeah.
This is a timeless song. This is joint. So, this song is amazing.
It is. The song is great. Everybody was on a lot of. But no, bro, you got. The thing about it is, though, it's like Boosie has been sampled so many times in so many ways that, like, I think that hip hop music tends to forget. That as much as we want to sit here and talk about rappers being original, like original lyrics, original beats, original everything, like you can't even have a ghostwriter, that music has never, hip hop has never been original. Like, it's always been rooted in some other genre. And to me, like, I kind of like that because finding out the song that you've been listening to for the past, like, 10 years that just tells the tale of your childhood is actually a song your mama and daddy used to get freaky on. Like, you go back and you listen and you be like, dog, like, I can't listen to this song no more. It's just not right. Or when you find out, like, something you thought was so dope, so original, so unique was like a sample of a sample at that. So
yeah, be like that.
So my whole thing,
and I tell people, because, like, you know, some people, like, when I be at work, they look at me and then they may hear me singing, like, because we play a lot of white shit on the PA system.
Of course.
And sometimes, you know, the white people who I work with catch me singing a song. They're like, hey, Duane, what you know about this? I'm like, well, I do music. And I feel like I need to know where shit comes from if I sample it. One thing I hate to do is be looking through beats and picking through beats, and I don't know the origin of how you made these epic beats because I didn't know the original song.
My thing is sometimes the music in Spotify can be your friend if you actually pay attention. So I have this habit of listening to music at work. That's just how I roll. But then all of a sudden you tend to come across a song and you'll go look for the song. So if you people out there don't know this, there's this app, this website, this publication. It's called Who Sampled It. It is your best. Okay? Because whatever song you listen to, I don't care how new or how old, or if you ever in one of them moments where you're like, dawg, this sounds familiar. Like, I heard this somewhere before. Where did I hear this before at? You just go to this website called whosampled.com and then just put the name of the song in. Because it'll be right there. For an example, one, what's the hottest future song ever dropped in the last couple of years?
That's a tough one because I listen to a lot of Future. What's your point?
I'm using the application right now. I'm gonna use the application right now. So,
Mask Off.
Okay, let's go ahead. Let's look at Mask Off. All right, so we all know like Mask Off is the shit. Now, don't get me wrong. That intro, the beginning part of the song, that's unique. Okay, that's what everybody catch. But like a large chunk of the song, of the middle of the song where the beat changes at, is actually from Carlton Williams called Prison Song. There's a beginning part of, it's like a play kind of thing that he made the song for, and it's sampled from there. So it's like songs that you wouldn't even think that's dope actually sampled. Okay? So, like, nothing's really original with music anymore. So my whole thing is, should we start giving the artists that are sampled more recognition than they are? So, like, for every time we spin, let's say, a Kanye West song, should we spin the sample that it was taken from as well, too?
Yeah, we'll be spinning fucking forever. Kanye West sample, 7 songs, a good one.
What I was saying, that 8-song playlist right there would be freaking dope if you mix it down right. If you think about it, like Father Stretch Out My Hand, that very first intro song, bro sampled like 8 different things. Like he sampled Jumpman by Drake and Future. He sampled, really count technically as an artist. He sampled a little girl's speech. Like, actually go on Facebook and see that little speech, too. Like,
yeah, kind of need to relax. Losing the fucking mind.
I'm just saying. But some songs, when they get sampled, though, they just very recognizable. You can't not know what that song is. Like when Love and Happiness get sampled, bro, we know. You hear it, you know that's Love and Happiness. Be Thankful, which is a huge song that I've just recently started listening to. It's a popular sample that I didn't know. You know. So here, Juan, tell me who sampled this song.
That's all I get.
That's all you get, bruh. The song is called Be Thankful. Alright, so let me see. I'll let you run it again. Maybe the chorus will help you out. You should know this, though. This might just be
the pre-breakdown.
It should be.
I feel like I was listening to this recently.
You were. Dog, if you don't get to them, I'll be mad at you, dog.
Okay, now when I hear this, I think it's ludicrous.
Okay, you're in the right direction.
To be like, I want something in the back.
Yep, that's the song.
Like, when I hear that, I think a little. When I hear this, I think a little.
And that's the song. It is a diamond in the back.
Oh, that was from him?
Yeah, diamond in the back.
Yeah, because I was like, I've been listening to a lot of ludicrous, man. Don't ask me why.
That's why I said, if you get at you, dog, be mad at you, dog. But I think we should stop, you know, punishing rappers, artists for having ghostwriters when we openly accept sampling. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have absolutely no problem with using someone else's beats. I mean, even with mixtapes, like 97 mixtapes are like, ooh, this was the hot song out this summer. Let me go spit some bars on it and then push some of this other stuff that I'm working on top of it, so I can keep my buzz up.
So what you're saying is, you shouldn't discredit people who have ghostwriters if we're going to sample?
If we're not going to discredit people from stealing beats, or discrediting producers. Because, like, don't get me wrong, bro, like, if you've been writing, you know what I'm saying? So, like, this is not your first rodeo. 2-3 albums in, you might need somebody to help you keep an ear to the... You know what I'm saying? Like, your struggle ain't the same struggle anymore. So you might need somebody to help you understand the new struggle. Or maybe even tell you, like, hey, bro, you know what I'm saying? This bar right here, this shit was hot, but, you know, with the way things is right now, maybe you should go with this bar instead. Like, let them have a little help.
I don't think we discredit the fact that people have ghostwriters. I think we discredit the nature in which they have an argument to take claim to the throne of being, quote-unquote, the best rapper in the game. Well, are you really the best rapper in the game if you're not really writing your rap?
Okay. Let's run with that. Okay, first of all, what makes a person the best rapper in the game?
You know what? Well, for you asking my opinion or just like,
yeah, I'm asking your opinion. I'm asking your opinion. Overall, your opinion slash overall, what do you think makes a person one of the best rappers in the game? Because let's create a foundation for this argument first.
Well, I think you have to have a catalog. A credible catalog, because anybody can have a song.
True.
You gotta have hits within your catalog.
True. Okay.
You have to have some kind of lyrical ability. You gotta have some bars.
Okay. We'll put an asterisk by that one.
Well, no, I mean, and then you
gotta
at least have.
Put on your list first.
And then you gotta at least have within your catalog at least 2-3 debatable albums when it comes to what's a classic.
Okay. Right. Now, let's go back to that one we put the asterisk by, lyrical ability. Now, I understand you. Now, me growing up, well, both of us technically coming from an era where was very influential in what, you know, how people got behind you. But when you look at today's generation, how the producer is what's making the album classic for some artists is, can we still hold that against them? So, like, you happen to have, like, one of the coldest singles for the summer, okay? It was the coldest single for the summer. You followed up with a pretty decent second track come school time in regards to whatnot. Then you drop some little BS in the winter. To get your 3 singles out for the year, but the album sold double platinum. Okay? So double platinum. Lyrically on this album, you didn't really say next to nothing. Okay? But people praised the album because it was the album of the year. It was the album, or it was the song that got everybody going everywhere. Prime example. Let's use Cardi B. I'm not hating on her. I'm actually proud of her. Would I sit there and bump her going down the street? Probably not. The minute I hear somebody else rapping over her beat that sounds way better, that will get heavy rotation out of me, but not Cardi herself. Okay? This next single she just got done doing, her own single, it's pretty decent for her style of rapping and whatnot. And then she got this fire track over here with Bruno Mars. You can't go wrong with Bruno Mars, because that nigga is the nigga everywhere. It don't matter what race, creed, or color you are, they love Bruno Mars, and if you do a song with Bruno Mars, people will listen. So technically, at the current moment in time, Cardi B has the hottest situation going on for any artist, okay? But that doesn't mean she talks about anything.
Well, true, but you have to separate these categories, because
it's another point I'm getting to.
I like Future. I love Future. I think I once questioned my ability. I once questioned music when Future dropped, because then, like, I found myself listening to dude all the time. I was like, what did I listen to before him? Like, I couldn't remember what I was listening to before I started listening to dude, because it was anything I was listening to had Future on it. It was Future.
I mean,
but
it'd be like that.
Like, Future makes consistently good music. His mixtapes are always on point. He doesn't put out bad albums. But Future is not a lyrical genius. So
not at all.
When you have to incorporate who's a lyrical beast, you can never put Future in a category of who's the best rapper. Now, if you ever want to do a category of who's hot, who's the hottest, or who's responsible for what the game sounds like now, of course I'll give Future all the credit in the world, because I feel like Future, and this is just my opinion, I could be wrong, people probably gonna listen to this podcast and be like, well, no, Juan, that's not true, but I feel like Future put Metro Boomin on.
It's, you know what, I'm not even gonna argue with you. That's actually a fact. It's actually a fact, because no one cared if Young Metro trusted you or not.
Right. I feel like Future. Before Future was getting heavy beats from Metro, like, you listen to stories like Metro, like, because they all from Atlanta. Well, Metro's right. Not from Atlanta, he's from somewhere else. But he, you know, he made his way down to Atlanta, and all the Atlanta producers, they work with each other. So, like, they could all be sitting in the same session or in the same studio, and he was giving out his beats for free. But, you know, nobody was really rocking with him. But it took the hottest rapper in the game at that time to start spinning over these Metro Boomin beats, and now I feel like everybody wants a Metro Boomin beat.
But that's how hip-hop should be anyway. Like, if you want to get somewhere in this day and age, especially with the way the new industry is set up, it should be based around your hard work. So if you're out here making beats, you got to give them away. Okay, so one artist that it took years for him to grow on me, and he did only because of his hard work, is actually Wayne. Like, there was that moment in time when the Hot Boys wasn't hot no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just wasn't on. Everybody was out doing their own thing. Every rapper had their own, you know, style. Everything was just over here. And then Wayne was dropping mixtape left and right. He was the mixtape king. He coined the mixtape king. Matter of fact, I can actually go on record and say, if it wasn't for Lil Wayne, mixtapes would probably not even be where they are. You know?
I can agree with. I would definitely agree with that whole.
Okay,
like, nobody's doing mixtapes like Wayne.
Nobody.
And now
nobody
I feel
would.
Like everybody. I feel like Wayne put that as a staple in hip hop, and now a lot of people resurge their career through mixtapes. And I think that's dope. Tom never comes back to the farm. No.
I got Lily talking to me, so I wanted to make sure I heard her without, you know, messing up the show. Now, what were you saying, sir? I apologize for that, you know, bother
you. No, I was just saying, like, I feel like what Wayne did for mixtape is like a staple in hip-hop now, where you see a lot of people get on through having a barrage of mixtapes, and you see a lot of rappers who disappear from the game kind of resurge their career through mixtapes.
Exactly. Mixtapes, I feel like, is vital to hip-hop now, okay? Because you can test the waters with your sound. You can see how much people... You can see if the time is right for you to drop this album on by doing a mixtape here or there. Because, you know, let's say, for an example, back in the days, if rappers were part of a group, they didn't want to roll out solo because they didn't know who Buzz was going to be the best, you could have put out a mixtape, see how people react to some things you're trying out, and if it worked, then yeah, put this album out. If it didn't work, let's try something different. You know, you can fix yourself. It's practice. That's how I look at it. It's the JV. That's how I look at it. It's a junior varsity game when it comes to mixtapes before you get in this varsity game where shit gets real.
But here's a question for you that I hear them talk about it a lot when I watch like hip hop forums on YouTube or I listen to hip hop podcasts. Does the mixtape really exist anymore? Because when you look at what is quote unquote a traditional mixtape, where you would have Wayne, my favorite rapper, when you look at how he does his dedication series, it feels like a traditional mixtape because, you know, he's got the DJ because he does it with DJ Drama, and then, you know, he beat jacks everybody or what's hot at the moment, and, you know, he goes crazy over it. But I was like, mixtapes don't really consist of the DJ and beat jacking. It's more like people give you original music but put it in a mixtape format, because, well, if I call it a mixtape, I don't have to worry about getting the samples clear because it's a mixtape. So I feel like people give you album quality work but call it a mixtape.
Well, it's a little bit of mixtapes to me, and this is the way I always thought of it as, was a sample of work that you didn't have to buy. That's basically all a mixtape really definition is. So if you want your mixtape to be good quality album, where I sat here and I made this album right here, I worked with this producer, I'm going to go ahead and let you hear it, this is what you're doing. A lot of times you have to remember, some people leak mixtapes or make mixtapes because the rumor is the album is getting leaked. You remember there was a point in time where everybody's album was just getting leaked for no reason. Like, no reason at all. Nas' third album could have been a classic had it not been leaked first. Okay? Somebody decided to say, hey, let's just put this on the internet. Some people, the contract will go and leak an album and they got to save face and call it a mixtape. Other ones, yes, they want to get themselves back in the game. They got all this work they've been working on. For an example, you know who would have truly been a mixtape king if mixtape existed during his time? Tupac. Ooh. Tupac would have been a mixtape king. Because if you think about that so-called work that he did when he was locked up, all them songs he wrote, all this music that was out there, I mean, Pac didn't really need to do a mixtape because he was so big at the time. Just, he could have put out 100% hot garbage and we would have been all over it because we was clamoring for some new Tupac, okay? But eventually he would have left Death Row, and when he left Death Row, we would have had to, in so many words, figure out how we gonna get this new Tupac sound he trying to put out. Then here comes the mixtape. Here comes the mixtape with I See Death Around Corner. Here comes the mixtape with Brenda Got a Baby Part 2. Here goes the mixtape of how he really feels about Bush. You know, because he has no ties to anybody or any label. So now he can say what he wants the way he wants to. And that would make a big difference when it comes to his craft. So, yeah, I honestly feel like mixtapes are in two different categories. You can have the mixtape where you sample all the hotness. you make your mixtape labeled that way. You let them know you're sampling hotness right now. You're not out here trying to change the world. We out here trying to jump on this Millie beat. we trying to get this face off flow going. Then you get those who like, I gotta get my buzz up. I gotta drop this EP. But I wanna go ahead and drop all 45 of these songs.
All like Chris Brown. I don't wanna hear another Chris Brown album until this coming summer.
Bro, he dropped an album big enough to go ahead and cover himself in 2020. I ain't mad at the young man. I'm just saying, bro, you could have spaced that out.
Bro, he gave us like 3 albums in one. Like, that's the shit to do. You trying to get out the deal. that's what Wayne should have did to get out the damn Cash Money contract.
I'm surprised people don't do it. They just go ahead and give you a triple disc album. I'm waiting for the artist to really drop a true triple disc.
Well, according to Tupac, that's what he tried to do. According to the Tupac movie, that's what he tried to do to get out of his Death Row contract.
That would make sense why he wrote almost 400 songs.
He dropped, they counted All Eyes on Me as 2 albums because it was a double disc.
Yep.
He did Machiavelli because he signed for 3 albums. That was 3 albums.
Yeah, but that too, once again, prove how I feel like every rapper should be required to take a business management class before signing anything. So while you in the studio working on your albums, you up-and-coming rappers, I 100% feel you need to go take a business management class down at MATC on Tuesdays and Thursdays nights so y'all would stop signing these bogus contracts or getting upset and being mad at the label when they tell you you can't go yet because you owe ABCD still in back debt and y'all confused about what happened.
Well, I mean, I honestly think if the label is going to front you that much money, they should just take that as a loss anyway.
No, because some artists actually flip it quite easily. And I think that's right, where the mixtape game comes into play at too, though. Like, you got to get that buzz.
If you're going to give me all this money and be like, okay, well, don't worry about it because you'll just make it back on your album sales. And then the album doesn't sell. Then you're like, you know, you owe me XYZG and that album didn't do right. So how are you going to pay this money back?
But that's the thing. They have a contingency of how they get their money back. The problem B is the artists feel like they got ripped off. Like, I'm not saying that they didn't, because, you know, we got a lot of, you know, inexperienced, you know, people, fucking 19, 20-year-old rappers out here who trusting what everybody's saying, because at the end of the day, they just want to make music. You know, that's always the thing. We just want to make music. We just want to go ahead and put this sound out here. We want to rep for our city. But nobody ever teaches them, like, dog, it's more to the game than just that. What is your next plan? What are you going to do for your sophomore album? Do you know how to handle yourself on tour? Some of that I feel like a record label should step up and be responsible for. But in other cases, dog, I honestly feel like you as an artist need to learn, bro. You can't just think that everything is so simplistic.
Well, I feel like when you just here to make music, that's just what you're here for, like.
But then you need somebody in your camp you can trust that's going to cover the business side of things for you there.
And you can't trust a lot of people.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. When you're getting ready to be on as a rapper, you need to know that there's somebody that's got your back. And I think that's where we make our mistakes at. We don't.
All my business affairs will go through Tone Deaf Radio.
Because I ain't got no reason to cheat you. I really don't.
Right. Man, I feel like if you're going to get somebody that you think going to cheat you, at least pick somebody that you know you can beat up. So if you think you can take them,
you just go pick a thing. I can just hire Jacob, bro, if that's what you want.
Oh, wow. I know some niggas that'll shoot Jacob. So you got
real talk. No, you know what I'm saying? And not to be funny, though, bro. Like, honestly, for you, any business venture that you ever want to do, I personally feel like you should go through Mimi. I feel like Mimi should be your business investor. One,
yeah,
because that's family. Two, she know at the end of the day, she know what your vices are. So because she know what your vices are, what can be your downfall, she knows how to look out for you. Two, you gonna listen to whatever Mimi got to say, because she ain't never gonna hear you wrong. I mean, she may publicly humiliate you, but she ain't going.
Yeah, she ain't gonna, terrible.
She ain't gonna hear you wrong. She can definitely make sure. At the end of the day, the contract is good, the holes is where they need to be at, and your weed supply is proper.
Showing up to all business meetings with the devil.
Hey, man. Sure. Based on history, the devil makes the best deals. He always seems to win in the end.
Yeah.
So why not?
Pretty much.
But shout out to Mimi. She actually sick today. So hopefully she'll get better. Because we got plans to talk about for her.
Kind of ironic that the person that lives in Haiti with the fucking heat on hell is cold.
Has a cold. Man, they get sick sometimes too, bro.
Man, the devil don't get sick.
Duh, you got to take into consideration, right? Right now, America is cold on all fronts. So, like, it's cold everywhere, dog. Like,
and shout out to my coworkers. I don't know how my coworkers can get my phone number. I thought I was blacklisted in the work phone book. Like, y'all should know how to get a contact with me.
They should or should?
They should. And then they text me and ask you stupid questions.
Like, can you come into work?
God, I hate that. Like, fast. No, I'm not coming to work. You took my ass. No, like, you gonna text me like, hey, why? You know, the schedule's kind of messed up, and you want to switch shifts with me? No, motherfucker, I've been closing all week. I work the midship tomorrow. You can eat all of my pants, brother. I am not working 1 to 9, baby. You can kiss my entire ass.
Well, with that being said, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be right back. For you guys out there, you know what February is. It's, even though it's Black History Month, it's also Black Panther Month. And one of the first lead singles off of the Black Panther soundtrack dropped this week. But this is actually King's Dead with Kendrick Lamar, J-Rock, Future, and it's one more person I forgot. Maybe you might know one. But we'll be right back, people.
I have no idea who that new guy is.
Pussy with that bullshit. You ain't really wild, you a tourist.
I took a in my penthouse and I freaked it. I haven't made my mind up, should I keep it? I got big dog status, it ain't no secret. Lady, nanny, nanny, slap on me now.
Bitch, I'm on the roll and I put that on the game.
Yeah, let's see with that bullshit. You ain't really wild, you a tourist. I be blacking out with the purists. I made 100,000 and I freaked it. I made 500,000. This ain't what you want.
What you want? Change.
To be called a mumble rapper, even though that's what the fuck you niggas doing, or they don't want to just be considered trap rappers. Well, that's what kind of music you're making, right?
True.
You can't make a certain kind of music and then get upset when people say, oh, well, it's trap music. Well, nigga, that's what it sounds like. It's not even so much the music, it's just the sound. Like, the way Atlanta sounded when T.I. first came out and then included Jeezy, and, you know, just how it sounded, it's how the entire fucking rap game sounds.
Okay, so do you feel that if we had subgenres built into the category that could garnish, let's say, awards, do you think that certain genres would be more prevalent or still be around? Such like crunk music. Don't nobody really get out here and get crunk no more. Do you feel like you could possibly win a Crunk Single of the Year award? Would people still make Crunk music? In the middle of the conversation?
No, because people was talking to me, so I had to kind of mute the background. Did you want to hear the conversation about me not ordering food just yet because I'm doing something?
No, I completely understand. We took a commercial break so I could take the kids downstairs. I'm just saying.
Right. I feel like subgenres only create more problems because everybody wants to be hip-hop. Because, I mean, it's all hip-hop, but, you know, people just like to... I feel like when people start subgenre, when they start a subgenre of music, I feel like it's just another form of excluding those who you don't feel are good enough or can't do what you do.
I don't know. I think subgenres might actually help more than it might hurt. To be honest with you, because then you can at least give the artist a lane to go down. So you don't have to appeal to everybody in the hip-hop category. You can just go ahead and drop this.
At the same time, when you start to put out your music, you start to, you know, distribute it to the world, and now it's like you're stuck with this label. Like, okay, well, all you know is a mumble rapper, trap rapper. All you do is this. All you do is that. And then... when people see that this is what they label you as, then, you know, hip-hop is already, you know, segregated. So you get these old niggas, as we get now, who don't like the younger niggas because they feel like it's not hip-hop. Well, what is hip-hop? It's always that question, like, if hip-hop was created to be a form of expression, what is the difference just because you express yourself with witty wordplay that he can't express himself with a melodic melody that's catchy, that's just as catchy as you with a 1-2 punchline, and you get the crowd going, ooh.
I agree with you, but I think that's where the subgenre can actually help out as well, too, because it allows that artist to say, hey, bro, you sit over here, and this is how you rap. And if I want to be like that, then yes, I would understand where your complaint is. That's not my lane. This is what my lane is right now. Now, as I, you know, get out here and maybe I'll drop a mixtape, and maybe on my mixtape, I'll try to touch that lane to see if that's even for me, or prove you wrong saying, hey, just because my flows is melodic, ladies can hum to it, and niggas can fuck to it, doesn't mean I ain't got lyrics to talk about in the streets. Let me show you what I can do, you know? I think it does. I think it allows the younger generation to have their staple that they need in their placeholder. So if they want to move to what these old heads are screaming, you ain't doing good in, they can do that on their own terms. Like, I'm not really here about spitting 17 bars in 2 minutes of, you know, what's going on in the streets. I'm here to have fun. So let me have fun. Now, when the time comes, and I can relate to that, and I can feel like, yeah, that struggle is my struggle, yeah, then I'll turn around and go ahead and spit 27 bars of hot fire about, you know, racial inequality. But for now, I'm not going to sit here and tell my white fans who love partying to my music that you suck as human beings. Because your great granddad was racist, I'm not going to do that. So, yeah, I honestly believe subgenres can help more than they can hurt.
I just think subgenres give old niggas another thing to bitch about.
First of all, mistake number one, old niggas are going to bitch because that's what old niggas do. Okay? Can never make old niggas happy. Old niggas still drink 40s out of a brown bag if you let them. Okay.
Let's not let the old niggas be old niggas.
Alright, you just gotta let them complain. But thinking about old niggas and old rappers, recently in the news, recent album that he dropped was not that subpar. It was not at the level that Eminem is known to do. And there was a lot of backlash from the Shady Aftermath camp in regards to this conversation. Being the fact that it's been said that Joe Buttons basically got his resurgence in hip-hop due to the fact that Eminem gave him a second chance at life, that his statement should not have been either made or should not have been so negative, since that's supposed to be his boy. Do you think Joe Buttons is right or wrong for actually talking ill about Eminem's new album?
I think Joe Buttons was totally in the right. He was totally correct. He was totally right. Like, I don't know why everybody's like such a big fuss about him saying that shit was trash. I mean, the shit was trash. It wasn't like Eminem put out a fucking classic album and then he was like, oh no, this shit trash. Cause then that would be considered hate. But I don't like, did you listen to Eminem's album?
I haven't listened to it yet. That's actually on my rotation of music to listen to this week at work. You know, I gotta do podcasts and then I listen to music to get me through the work week.
Eminem's album was not good.
Now, first of all, when it comes to like rappers returning, rappers getting sober, rappers cleaning up, what are we comparing these rappers to? Are we even giving albums fair chances anymore when they're being done by, I don't want to say legends, but by people who've been in the game long enough to have a decent catalog?
Well, I feel like, this is just my personal opinion, I feel like just because you get older don't mean that you get whack. It's like just because you're old don't mean you still can't rap. I mean, sure, your lyrical content may have to evolve at some point in time because you're older and you're not the same 22-year-old kid who's living wild and popping pills and, you know, in and out of prison type shit. So, of course, you know, you're not going to rap about that. Like, you can usually hear the growth in, like, Jay-Z, for example. Jay-Z is almost 50. But when
almost,
Jay-Z
starts, he was.
He may be 50. I'm not really sure on home, but he could be 50. I'm not sure. But the point being is, just because Jay is getting old does not mean Jay is putting out terrible music. But you can listen to the growth of where Hov first started from his very first album, Reasonable Doubt, when he was that young hustler. So then you saw the growth of Jay becoming a businessman. Now, as you like to refer to Wolverine as Old Man Logan, this is Old Man Hov. Hov is not rapping about busting guns no more. Hov is a family man. Hov ain't losing 94 bricks. He ain't rocking with, you know, he ain't in a caravan with Emery Jones no more. Like, he's an executive now. So the lyrical content is definitely going to change because he's older. He's more mature. He's a husband. He's a father. It's just like what Tone does now at where you are. He's 38, right?
Nah, you're right.
So you definitely not as wild as you were at 25 because you now have two kids and you're married. So 38-year-old Tone is definitely not doing what 25-year-old Tone is doing.
That's questionable.
But the point is, that doesn't mean you're any less fun to be around just because...
Right.
It ain't, hey, Juan never gonna pop a Molly. It may be, hey, Juan, you wanna sit down and play Monopoly? That shit, like, it doesn't mean...
Yeah, we
were
popping Molly's playing Monopoly. What
are
you talking about? I mean, we weren't popping Molly's, but I get what you're saying.
Right, but it's your level of fun has changed, or the things you do for fun has changed. And
right.
I think Eminem is at that point where it's like, when you look at his catalog, you look at... Eminem probably wasn't sober for most of the majority of his run of being on top. He probably wasn't in his right frame of mind. So, you know, he went away, he got himself right, he's probably a better person now, he's probably a better father. and he's a lot sober. When you're sober, you think quick. And I get it as a fan. You like, we want that old Eminem. But in order to get that old Eminem, Eminem got to go to a dark place, and which he probably doesn't want to go to anymore because that's not his life anymore.
Nobody should go back to that place. Right, well, and I feel you on that. But now you bring up, you know, hip hop is about as old as we are. Okay, it started when damn near when you were just born. I'm not trying to be funny, but man, I mean, it technically started back when I was just born. But you know, nobody really started getting this the liveness popping until around about, you know, late '88, early '90s. And if you listen to the contents of rap and people who, you know, deal with rap, we shouldn't get old based on the way rap music is. It's for some odd reason labeled a young man's game and young man things. But now that we're starting to get older rappers because we're not out here killing people on a daily basis in our music like we used to, do you think that just because the new generation is not accustomed to having fathers in rap now, that it's making it difficult for people to look past the fact that, yeah, like, Scarface rapping on a song is like my uncle dripping science, and maybe I'm not ready for that, you know?
Well,
like,
I
do you feel like the fact that these niggas is old now is really starting to tamper with the game? You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm conveying
this. I think it goes back to my point. Because you get older, don't mean you get whack. Like Scarface is about as OG as it gets, you know? But like his last project was that I know of.
His last three projects.
The Deeply Rooted joint was probably the last Scarface project I listened to in full.
Yeah, the last one he dropped.
It wasn't bad.
That was all your uncle telling you shit. That's all I felt like. My uncle, who happened to live down south, dropping his knowledge on me, trying to make me a better man. That's how I felt. But that's what I'm saying. Like, we starting to get old rappers now, like Scarface and Eminem and Jay-Z. They're like dads of rap now. They're parents in this gang. I mean, people like Jazzy Jeff and Will Smith will technically be like grandfathers because of when they came out. But Queen Latifah, somebody's grandma, or that old auntie of your sister, your grandma. But they're not old people. They're just old music-wise. And I think that's kind of the problem that we're having with the generation, because everybody doesn't match up to the same genre, so we don't want to listen with different ears. We want to listen with the same ears every single time. Like, people who grew up on Scarface, Tupac, and Biggie want everybody to be categorized like Tupac, Biggie, Scarface, which is not fair. Because
if you go according to, okay, let's look at it like this. I feel like hip hop is a new generation. Now, your generation, because you know you're a little older than me, you kind of got the first, you definitely got the first wave of gangster rap, because you know you were growing up through the NWA.
Lord knows I turned up and straight out of Compton. Everywhere.
Right. So you definitely got the first legit wave of gangster rap with NWA and, you know, Ice Cube, Dr. Dre, Snoop, you know, the beginning of what became Death Row and, you know, whatever, Ruthless Records. So it's like, you got the beginning stage. Now, Doggy Style came out in 93, The Chronicle in 92. I wasn't, you know, really old enough to know what I was listening to, but, you know, I had an uncle who was into that. So, you know, I kind of rode that way with him as, you know, I got older and I go back and do my shit. Like, okay, I know what the Dog Pound was, but I want to say that when I really started, you know, listening to the music, to know what I liked and what I didn't like, it was around Tupac and Biggie.
Right.
So, I can say I'm from the Tupac and Biggie era. So, in the Tupac and Biggie era, we had Nas coming up and Hov, you know, just getting his feet wet in hip hop. So, and then I can say that I've grown with Lil Wayne, because Wayne started rapping at, you know, Hot Boys when I was in like middle school or a little bit after elementary school. So, you know, I'm the Hot Boy and the No Limit. Right. So it was like, I seen all of that.
Man, I was caught up in that No Limit era. Like, I don't care what nobody say, dog. The Hot Boy No Limit era, when you're in the South, is, man, I'm guessing this is how hip hop in Atlanta feel like.
Right. But I feel like kind of me and you are at them ages where it's like, we saw where hip hop, where like you saw where hip hop came from, and you saw what it became. It's like, you're not too old to where you're out of touch with the new stuff, because some of the new stuff do be popping, even though I really don't understand the lyrics or bars. With the, you know, the younger rappers, some of them got bars, some of them don't. But it's good music. I like it. If I can bounce to it, if I like it, you know, it's dope. It's like, so you're not out of touch to where you completely an old nigga. But it's like, I know where you go. I know where the game is going, but I also know that it was better in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we got Nelly and Ja Rule and 50 Cent came out. So it's like, we've seen stages of hip-hop. So I feel like where hip-hop is now, all those people from the early 2000s are kind of like what the younger generation has to look up to. And some of what the younger generation has to look up to don't want to be that guy that they look up to.
I feel you. I think the biggest thing about the change in music that made the biggest issue, especially for the old heads, was the change in how you can get that music. Because when the newer generation, we can actually say starting with the Hot Boy era, you didn't have to always buy your music to get it. So the artists wasn't always getting paid. And I think some of the anger from that generation started to be towards it, because like, hey, you're listening to my music, but you're not buying my music, or you're not listening to my music, you're using my beat to make your mixtape, but you're not honoring where it came from. So a lot of ones was feeling disrespected, when in actuality they were getting respect. Like, this beat is hot, your flow is what I've studied all my life, so I'm going to go ahead and honor you by doing it this way and that way. It just so happens that I'm going to give it away for free because I don't feel right stealing your music and then making a profit off of it, you know? And we said this before, when it comes to hip-hop music, and like you said, generations and genres and growth and stuff like that, I've always labeled it like a family growing up. You had the immigrant dad who left the country they came from. In this particular scenario, it'll be disco, because anybody who knows hip-hop was born in disco. If you didn't know hip-hop was born in disco, go on Netflix and watch The Get Down. You'll see the very humble beginnings of hip-hop, as simplistic as they could possibly make it. Once you go ahead and you display that, then when that generation got notoriety, got noticed, people want to make an album, where the Sugar Hill Gang started at, you're now feeding your dad. Your dad is now in the business. Now your dad can talk about living two different sides of the coin. Your dad can talk about growing up in that disco era, having fun, partying, getting all of us together, but also tell the story of, like, the streets are bad, my nigga. It's not safe out here. You know what I'm saying? Niggas is out here wilding, son. You gotta do something. He gotta do something. Dad put that word out there. Now, dad had his son. Now, his son, still on the back of that list, we now need to talk about that more. That's where your NWAs, your Tupacs, your Biggie, that era, were still talking about what was going on in the world, but they started moving away from needing to always be in the streets, on the blocks, in the corners, dropping this music, to now we have studios, we have record labels, we have people who want our music and want to make money, so let's get that. Then after that, now taking into consideration, after the the Pacs and Biggies, and everything got real bad with the East Coast, West Coast beef that the media drummed up, nobody wanted to talk about that life anymore.